Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What is the significance of the holy month of Ramadan to the world's Muslims, and what sort of spiritual growth results from weeks of strict fasting, prayer, and reflection? My two guests this hour are here to talk about their own experience of Ramadan, although they come to it from very different faith traditions. Imam Yasin Sheikh is Imam of the Plano Masjid and Islamic Association of Collin County. The Reverend Dr. Wes Magruder is Senior Associate Pastor of First United Methodist Church of Rowlett. He decided this year to join his Muslim friends and neighbors in observing Ramadan, and he's been writing about it on his blog, The New Methifesto. Gentlemen, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Start, if you would, by talking about the significance of Ramadan for Muslims, what is required, and how adherence to the faith benefit.
First and foremost, thanks for having me here. I really appreciate the invitation, and I'm grateful that you and honored that you invited me to speak here. The month of Ramadan is a blessed month in the Islamic calendar, and the significance of it is fasting, of course. But it also forms one of the pillars of Islam. Islam is based on five pillars, the first one being faith and shahada, the second one being prayer, ritual prayers that we perform five times a day. The third one is fasting in the month of Ramadan. When God speaks about Ramadan in the Quran, he says that we prescribed fasting on you as we did for people before you. So the phenomenon of fasting wasn't new to the Muslims. It was something God ordained for people even before Islam. Maybe not in the month of Ramadan, but at different times of the year. So we also learned that Moses, when he received the Torah, and Jesus, when he received the gospel, they were in a state of fasting. So when Muhammad received the Quran, which is the final book of revelation for Muslims, they believe that Muhammad was in a state of fasting as well and meditation. So Ramadan has a great relationship with the Quran itself, because the Quran was revealed at that specific time of the year. But the primary purpose of fasting that God mentions in the Quran is righteousness, piety, God awareness, and God consciousness. That through fasting, a person adopts awareness of God when he can prevent or restrict himself from enjoying the permissible things God has allowed him to permit, allowed him to enjoy throughout the year. Then he should have enough willpower and discipline to avoid the restrictions and prohibitions of God throughout the year. So that's the primary reason for the month of Ramadan. It's a spiritual booster for people. It's a time of the year where many people can connect with God on a deeper level through their fasting, through their meditation, through their prayers, through the recitation of the Quran. It's a time of the year where the mosques are filled. Congregations are large, huge. People worship throughout the day, throughout the night. And, of course, in countries where the dominant population is Muslim, then there's a whole different atmosphere. Throughout the day, you'll probably see a slow-paced atmosphere. And then at night, things pick up, and they'll probably be a bit more sluggish throughout the day in their work. But generally, after the night, everything picks up, and the markets are full, and people are eating and enjoying themselves, and then going to the mosque and performing the prayer. It's a very deeply spiritual month of the year, and it's also one for the congregation, the community, to unite and come together and appreciate the gifts that God has given them. And specifically for us in America, it's a beautiful time of the year because we're an extremely diverse community, being the most religiously diverse community in this country. So it's a wonderful time of the year for us to celebrate those diversities and for the community to bond and come together. And also inspires us to become generous and kind, and to reach out to the underprivileged and those around us that are not so fortunate to enjoy the privileges that we do in this country and in this part of the world. So it's also it also teaches us a lesson of giving. And when you're hungry and thirsty and you can't eat and drink because God has restricted you from doing so, then it gives you the sense of empathy and the realization of how thousands of people, millions of people around the world feel without water to drink, without food to eat. So it encourages a person to give in charity. And there is a pillar of Islam known as zakah, which is charity, 2.5% of one's surplus wealth that he must give in the path of God. So it's a beautiful time of the year for Muslims to demonstrate that giving as well.
So, Wes, what got you thinking that you might like to observe Ramadan along with your Muslim friends and neighbors? And how did your non-Muslim friends and neighbors respond when you first said, this is an idea I have?
Well, I was invited by Yassin to attend the dedication of their new building in Plano. This was just a few weeks ago, July 14th, and it was a beautiful ceremony, and the thought just occurred. It occurred to me then because he mentioned that they were thrilled that the building was completed in time for Ramadan, and the thought occurred to me then. It also happens that we've been doing through our church some work with refugees in the Dallas area. Many of these refugees are Muslim. They're from Sudan, Somalia, and I've been listening to their stories as well. And the thought just occurred to me that I would like to know what that's like. I'd like to know what that feels like. I have fasted in the past, but Methodist fasts are pretty wimpy, and we give up food for, you know, half a day or something like that. So I wanted to try something more serious. I wanted to really experience what it's like, number one, to be in solidarity with my new refugee friends and with Yassin, but also, secondly, really to deepen my own spiritual life. I mean, I can tell that there's a deep truth and a deep power to fasting, and I feel like I'd never really experienced it for myself. So I sort of made it a challenge to myself and thought I'd blog about it and share that experience with people. So far, what has surprised me so much is the response I'm getting. I just had an outpouring of everybody. I mean, I really only thought that my Methodist friends and Christian friends would be the one reading my blog, but Yassin has shared it with many of his congregation, and the link has gotten passed around, and it's just spread. And now I'm reading comments every day from people all over the world, Muslims who are giving me encouragement, giving me advice about what to do, what not to do, and it's been really, really encouraging.
Even things, it's funny because there, of course, are spiritual encouragements and people are excited for your journey, but even pragmatic tips, which in a way seem very generous because they're just like, this is how I get through it, and I wish you the best.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the best advice I had was, I mentioned in a blog that I had broken my fast with a hamburger, and somebody said, you shouldn't be breaking your fast with red meat like that. So I've taken that to heart.
Huh. Typically at the end of the day, people come together in Muslim communities and share, if not a feast, a pretty significant meal. Yassin?
Yes, the meal that we have at the end of the day is called iftar, the breaking fast meal. And many mosques around the country, the communities will come together and have a potluck where families will bring food from their homes and the entire community will join in a meal. In a smaller community, smaller mosque, it's more possible and feasible, whereas in a larger mosque, for 1,000 people to come together every day will be difficult. So we do have, community iftars on the weekends, on Saturdays and Sundays. And you know, we've invited Wes to come along this weekend. And I believe he's been invited to. Last week, he enjoyed iftar with the McKinney Islamic Association. And tonight he'll be in Irving. And on Saturday or Friday, he'll be in Arlington. So he's been receiving an overwhelming response from the Muslim community locally, and they're very, very proud of him, and they admire his efforts and his intentions. That meal is very significant, of course, because you know you've been starving throughout the day and thirsty throughout the day. So partaking of that meal is of great importance, but we try not to overindulge because that defeats the objective of Ramadan, where we're supposed to feel a bit of empathy. You're supposed to feel some sort of spiritual inclination towards God, whereas you know, because for 11 months of the year you've been starving your soul, feeding your body, and at this time of the year we want to feed your soul and starve your body. So we usually do try and encourage the community not to be wasteful and to be thankful to God for the favors he's given us. And But it's a significant meal. Many families will get together and have those meals. I mean, I've been invited to so many myself, but I mean, having different obligations with the mosque and the night prayer, I usually decline invitations in Ramadan.
Is it harder, Yassin, when Ramadan takes place, especially here in Texas in the dead of summer, because it can fall throughout the year?
Definitely. I think that the hardest aspect, I mean, despite the heat, I mean, we live in a society where most people are working within a building and or staying within their homes, and they enjoy the luxury of air conditioning and AC. So they don't, you don't really feel too much of it apart from your throat getting dry. But if you have to work out in the field, then it's a bit more difficult. I have a colleague right now that works at an inspection shop. I mean, he's in Plano, and I could understand how difficult it is for him fasting throughout the day. And I have, also have a colleague that does deliveries for FedEx, and and that's very tasking because he's holding sometimes 50-pound packages on his back, and he has to be in and out of the van, and that could be very difficult. We have to remember historically, Prophet Muhammad lived in Arabia, and Arabian heat is far more devastating than the heat of Texas. I would imagine 50 degrees Celsius they get the plus. And if you look at some of the Muslim countries or some of the third world countries where fasting is observed, then you find, you know, for example, in India and places like that, where people don't really enjoy the luxury of air condition and AC, and they walk everywhere they go. So it's very difficult. But yes, in Texas, it is difficult. I mean, to answer your question, I live very close to the mosque, and just walking from my house to the mosque, I'm dripping in sweat, and it's difficult for me to observe the fast. But you know, I think those endeavors are watched by God, and he rewards a person according to his sacrifices and his efforts.
Wes, not so much physiologically, but spiritually and emotionally and mentally, how has so far has this experience compared with what you expected it might be?
Mm-hmm. Well, I recall that whenever I have fasted in the past before, that I've tried not to just focus not just on the not eating or drinking, but I've also have tried to make a conscious decision, okay, when I feel the hunger, when I feel that gnawing in my stomach, you know, that's the moment in which I ought to pray. That's the moment in which I become aware of God. What's different with this fast is I'm aware all the time because it just seems as if the gnawing is always there, or the dryness in the mouth. And I wrote about it in one of my blogs. There actually does feel as if there's a permanent buzz in my head. It's really hard to explain, but I just feel it. I mean, I wake up in the morning and I know that, you know, I'm fasting. And so what that does is it forces me to be truly more aware and conscious of God and God's presence all the time. And so it's been a unique aid to prayer, just the constant awareness. Also, I have tried to take on some of the positive, you know, some of the things we're supposed to be doing in addition. So I have, in addition to the reading I already do of my Bible and some other spiritual reading, I've been reading the Quran and integrating that into my devotional time. And as well as I've just expanded, I think I've just expanded my prayer list, the number of people and situations that I'm praying for, I find myself meditating on, thinking about. And also, in a very odd way, I find myself calmer. And I just noticed that yesterday. I'm a little bit calmer in my demeanor. Probably all of my staff members are laughing at me at the moment, but because I'm generally the type of person who likes to have a lot of fun, is always making jokes, but I feel a little bit calmer, lower key, a little more serious this for the last week and a half. So I've noticed that as well.
We're talking about the holy month of Ramadan with Reverend Wes Magruder, who is Senior Associate Pastor of First United Methodist Church of Rowlett and is blogging about his experiences at the New Methifesto. Also with us is Imam Yassin Sheikh, who is Imam of the Plano Masjid and the Islamic Association of Collin County. If you'd like to join the conversation, share your story, or ask a question, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can study a variety of topics such as creative writing, human rights, and the arts. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are Imam Yassin Sheikh, who is Imam of the Plano Masjid and the Islamic Association of Collin County, and the Reverend Dr. Wes Magruder, who is Senior Associate Pastor at First United Methodist Church of Rowlett, who's been blogging about his experiences observing Ramadan at the New Methifesto. If you'd like to join our conversation, call us. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send comments or questions via email to think@kera.org. Yassin, is this something that people look forward to? Are they sort of, oh no, Ramadan is coming and we really have to sort of get serious about things? I mean, what is the, you're an imam, but mm-hmm. what do you get this, what is your sense about how the people that you are guiding spiritually feel about this?
I think there's a great sense of excitement for the month of Ramadan. There's many elements to it. The spiritual element is a great sense of excitement where people feel that they've been spiritually drained throughout the year. It's a time for them to recharge their batteries, because fasting isn't just restricting yourself from food and drink, but it's also fasting of the limbs of the body, the eyes, the mouth, the ears, and you know, preventing or abstaining from sins of different parts of the body, and keeping the mind fasting as well, connected to God. So it's an exciting time of the year where people can connect with their purpose and intent that God places on earth for. But also, I mean, it's a time of the year where sometimes your wife and your mother won't cook things throughout the year that they'll cook in Ramadan. So those meals are something people look forward to, you know, and the food is a very high list and high up on the list of priorities on people's on lists. And so it's a time of the year where people receive it with great excitement and great joy. But also the celebration at the end of Ramadan, known as Eid, is a very big part of the celebration. So that anticipation, you know, the clothes and the henna that the women apply, and it's just a great sense of excitement. And you know, of course, the prayers at night, listening to recitation of the Quran and enjoying the words of God and being inspired by that. And it's just a very exciting time. I've never met anybody that's been that considered it a burden or thought, oh, now it's Ramadan, we have to fast. I've always met people that are very, very excited about it, even the youth and the young and the old, and everybody's very excited when Ramadan comes.
Of course, everyone, when you go to work, you're mostly surrounded by people who are also observing the fast. That's the case at home. It's different, Wes Magruder, for you.
Yes, it is. And I had written about that because I was thinking about the fact that I'm doing it alone, in a sense, in my environment, in my home. And at first, I thought that it was something that I should embrace alone. I thought this was part of my own personal spiritual journey. And then someone on one of the comments invited me. You know, they made the point, well, you know, really, you'll get the most out of it if you break the fast with others, if you'll do it in community. So a man named Osman invited me to McKinney, and I decided to do it. And I found that was a very powerful evening to break the fast with others, to be in the room together, you know, to take the first bite of the date and to drink water, and then to be in prayer, to observe the prayers, and then to have the big meal. Everybody, you know, treated me as if I were just a member of the community. Just by seeing the way that people interacted, I could tell this was, you know, a family-type gathering, a fellowship. And I realized that yes, the beauty of Ramadan happens in those evenings, in those community iftars and those times. And so I'm trying to fill up my schedule with as many community iftars as I can, because otherwise I find myself at 8:30 at the house, you know, trying to figure out what I'm going to eat.
Ordering pizza.
Exactly. running to the corner to get something.
We actually had a photo of that iftar that you just mentioned up on our website, mm-hmm. That I think we took from you. Talk, if you would, Yassin, about how it's different. Is it different every year? Do you have a different experience each Ramadan that you celebrate based on where you are in your life and sort of what you need to reflect upon?
Certainly. I think depending on one's age, of course, and where they are, what part of the world they're in, and also the you know, which part of their life, you know, where they are in, whether they're in transition, whether they're settled, whether they're in college life, whether they're married, whether they have kids. I think the outlook is different every time. You know, I met a gentleman that went through surgery a couple of weeks ago, and he wasn't able to fast, and he was just very, very sad that in 60 years this is the first Ramadan he's going to miss. So I think Ramadan is approached differently every time around, and I think the older you become, the more mature you are, and your understanding of Ramadan and that experience becomes more different as well. I think when you're younger, it's the anticipation of Eid and the gifts you're going to receive, and the incentives your parents give you for fasting. If you fast, then we'll give you this, and you'll get an Xbox or a PS3, or you get this, or you know some of the incentives that parents tend to give. But I think once you get older, you start to understand the spiritual aspects of it a bit more, and God's wisdom behind prescribing fast for man.
You mean to tell me there's gifts at Eid? I didn't realize that.
But Eid's on a Sunday this year. If you're willing to come to the mosque on a Sunday,
I think you got work that day.
Are you going to buy me something?
Talk about this. The physical experience of hunger, and I'm curious about both your perspectives on this. What is it about that? And there are multiple spiritual traditions many people have recognized down throughout the ages that there is something special about this feeling of intense hunger. And why do you both feel that it connects you to God?
Do you want me to start?
Sure.
Well, I think beyond the flesh and the bones that God's created us within us, we have a spiritual element to us, every human, that has an inclination to a higher being. And everybody has within their nature the will of submission to somebody higher. And I think what we do is that we tend to focus on the physical aspects of our life too much, whether it's our appearance and different physical aspects. And it allows us, when we deprive our bodies of food and drink that our bodies need to survive on. So we tend to, you know, we eat to live rather than live. We live to eat rather than eat to live. That's our demeanor all year round, our behavior and our attitude. In the month of Ramadan, when you're fasting and you're depriving your body, then it allows that angelic side of ours to come to surface. And it's kind of, as you could say, it's a characteristic of God, because God doesn't eat, God doesn't need drink. And so we're getting closer to God in that way. And of course, God is God and is above His creation. But it's an experience that of angels and the creation of God. So it's a very I think it's very beneficial. It's a detox for the body, and it's also a detox for the mind as well.
Yeah, I would echo that. And I'm always reminded of Jesus fasting. You know, in the Christian tradition, Jesus fasted for 40 days in the wilderness, and he was tempted by Satan, and was tempted. The first temptation was to eat, to go ahead and turn the stones into loaves of bread. And he responded by saying, "Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God," which was a way of saying that when we fast, we are focusing on our true identities. We are not just physical beings. We are not just animals. We are beloved children of God. And I think fasting puts us in touch with who we really are, our real identities, our true selves, for that period of time.
Let's go to the phones now. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak first with Linda in Fort Worth. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Well, I just wanted to share an experience or experiences that I've had with a church that I attend in the Mid-Cities area. It's a United Church of Christ called the Cathedral of Hope Mid-Cities. And on Sunday, we celebrated the beginning of Ramadan, and our pastor spoke. The sermon was about Ramadan. We had a reading from the Quran. And we have also just completed a year of study of compassion as it functions in all the different faith traditions. And we also, many of us, participate in a group in the Mid-Cities called the Daughters of Abraham, which is women from Jewish, Muslim, and Christian faith, and some of no faith, who meet together. And we have also visited each other's services. And so my observation is simply that when you do this kind of thing, you find out that we're really so much alike, and the differences are very small compared to the things that unite us, the main one being being compassion. And I was particularly struck on Sunday by the instruction that if a person is, I hope this is correct, if a person is unable to fast because of health reasons or something, then they are to feed someone else.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for your call, Linda. Do you want to comment on her observations there?
Yeah, I think her observation is correct because, as I mentioned earlier, fasting is not a tradition that began with Islam. It's a tradition that was there before, and all great prophets of God that came, they fasted and they practiced fast, maybe at different times of the year, but they did practice the fast. So it's a very good observation. And, of course, definitely the remarks you made at the end is from the Quran, where if a person's unable to fast, because the purpose of fasting isn't to kill the individual. So if the person is unable to fast due to health reasons, or if he's a traveler, he's sick, then, you know, travelers and sick individuals are exempt from fasting. They would make them up when they return to their destination or when their health returns. But if people are terminally sick, the pregnant, people that are feeding, or, you know, they're required to feed a person instead of fasting.
I highly recommend also that group that she speaks of, Daughters of Abraham. I'm familiar with that effort as well. And I truly believe that, yes, we should be focusing on our similarities. We have so much in common. But I have to say, I think we have to even get more basic than that. We have to begin to simply meet each other. And my observation, at least in the neighborhoods where I live, is we don't often enough take the time simply to meet or get to know, quite literally, our neighbors. And so that's why it was important when Yasin reached out to me in Plano, which is actually where I live, that I actually spent time with him, got to know him. And I think that, you know, that's the very first thing that has to happen. We simply have to reach out and get to know our neighbors.
What do you think stands in the way of that?
Well, I think fear. I'll speak for myself. It's fear. It's fear of the other. And of course, I think anyone knows that all of us know that over the last 11 years since 9/11, I think there has been a terrible disservice done to Muslims in the country, just in the kind of media attention that Muslims get and the kind of stereotypes that are perpetuated.
No, I echo the same sentiments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does seem, Yasin, in this country, it's pretty easy to be surrounded by, for many people, American culture is sort of synecdoche for Christian culture. And of course, we know that that doesn't encompass all of America by any means. But do you feel like people sort of assume the onus is on you to explain yourself and what you're doing and what your faith is?
Yeah, unfortunately, the situation has become a reactionary one, where rather than being proactive, Muslims are having to be reactive. Whereas if there is a criticism made in the media, if there's an allegation against Muslims or Islamic practices or cultures in Middle Eastern countries, instantly the name of Islam is tarnished or attached or connected to that mm-hmm. practice, and Muslims are having to come out and react to that. So I'm not saying that the entire blame is on the media. Of course, the media is responsible for a lot of that. But I think before 9/11, I think if Muslims had been more proactive, engaged civically in the community, and I think they would have dispelled a lot of those misconceptions beforehand. And I think I have an experience of that in London, I mean, where I was an imam previously, and we had just an interfaith dialogue every 2-3 months, quarterly, with Catholic priest and a Protestant pastor, and as an imam, and then there was a Buddhist leader and a pundit from a Hindu temple, and we would just talk about faith issues. And after the July 7 bombings took place in London, we had great and enormous support from the church and from the local Christian community, and they stood up and spoke and defended us and said, "We know these people, and Islam is a peaceful religion, and Muslims are peaceful people." So I think having those conversations before interacting with the purpose of peaceful coexistence, and rather than using the term tolerating, accepting the differences that we have and accepting the other and bonding through our differences, I think it helps and goes a very long way.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Abdul on the line in Dallas. Hi, Abdul.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Mm-hmm. For accepting my call.
Sure.
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh Yasin.
Wa alaikum salam.
Hi, brothers.
Alhamdulillah, good.
Yeah, very good. Well, there is a first in Arabic, it says sumu tasahu, meaning fast and be healthy. I see changes, a lot of changes when I fast. Especially what I do is, instead of eating early breakfast, early morning breakfast, just like drinking water would be like keep you more stronger. You will not get thirsty that much, and you will not get dehydrated. So that is my comment I have. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you. He was quoting a hadith of the Prophet Muhammad. A hadith is a statement of the Prophet Muhammad where he said, fast and you should be healthy. And I think recent studies have found that the body does need a detox every now and then. And it was the Prophet Muhammad's practice to fast on Mondays and Thursdays, and it has a lot of medical benefits. Just recently, there was a journal that produced a study that stated it could also prevent brain tumour and brain problems. So he's right. I mean, people have different practices of what they found more effective for the pre-fast meal. Some people like to have oatmeal, keeps them going longer in the day, but definitely hydration is number one. It's key to drink plenty.
Is one of the elements of the fast, and forgive me because I haven't participated in anything this stringent, I mean, do you also fight, you know, that sort of crankiness that comes from being hungry? And is that part of your sacrifice and of your reflection on things?
Definitely, as I was mentioning earlier, that fasting is, you know, refraining from physical objects or physical needs that we have, or food and drink is just one part of the fast. It's the spiritual element of developing the willingness to fight against anger and to treat people with respect and also fasting of the different limbs of the body that has a deeper spiritual and profound meaning.
My guests this hour are talking about Ramadan in North Texas. We have Imam Yassin Sheikh, who is Imam of the Plano Masjid and the Islamic Association of Collin County. Also with us is the Reverend Dr. Wes Magruder, Senior Associate Pastor at First United Methodist Church of Rowlett, who is blogging about his experiences observing Ramadan at the New Methofesto. You can join the conversation in a moment. We have lines open at 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with the Reverend Dr. Wes Magruder, Senior Associate Pastor of First United Methodist Church of Rowlett, and Imam Yassin Sheikh, who is Imam of the Plano Masjid and the Islamic Association of Collin County. If you'd like to join us, you can email think@kera.org. That's where we hear from Fod. Fod says, I live in Washington, D.C. I've been following Wes's blog and was curious if friends and family have given him any difficulties for fasting this Ramadan.
No, they have been very supportive. In fact, my wife Leah actually has moved back her dinner time to match mine, so I'm grateful for that. My kids not so much, but yes, I've had a very good response also from the congregation. They're very interested. What I've seen is it's opened up a chance to talk about Islam and to answer some questions best I can. And I do plan to have Yassin come to my congregation sometime and visit with the folks over there in Rowlett. So, no, it's been very positive. It's been a very positive experience all the way around so far.
Yassin, what did you think when Wes first said, I want to do this?
I thought he was crazy.
Why?
It's not easy. That's what the first mm-hmm. response. My first response to him was that it's intense,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And now he understands the meaning of intense. I thought it would be, you know, coming from a different faith background, it would be interesting to see his experiences and how he would fade as behaving like a Muslim for a month
mm-hmm.
per se. So it was interesting. I thought he wouldn't maintain it, to be honest with you. I thought he would do it 2-3 days and he'll probably give it up. Who would know? Nobody would find out.
Yeah.
He's not accountable. He's not Muslim. But I'm very, very impressed. I didn't actually discover that he was blogging about it until I checked his Facebook status and he had posted his third day report or blog. And I thought, wow, this is very interesting. And I started reading it, and it was inspiring for me as well as a Muslim and an imam to read his experiences and how, you know, his perspective on fasting, which was absolutely beautiful. And I decided to share it with my Facebook friends, and it just took off. And now you have people inviting him for iftars and for dinners. And I hope that wasn't a hidden agenda.
Some good food out there.
Yes, absolutely.
It is always interesting when someone comes to something that for you is familiar, even if it's very special, but is familiar from an outside perspective, because they're going to notice things that either you hadn't noticed at all or had forgotten a long time ago.
Yeah, and I haven't told Yassine yet, but I'm going to ask him if he'll fast during Lent.
I'll definitely take it.
Okay, good. No. Yes, but again, that wasn't. I know that's been a response for him. He's seeing it from a different perspective, and that's one of the common refrains in the comments is from Muslims who said, "I've been doing this for many years, but I'm seeing it from a different perspective." That wasn't really, you know, my initial intention, but I'm learning as well. From them. And also, I think it's just true of anybody from any faith tradition that the rituals we grow up with, the traditions we grow up with, can become stale with constant repetition and overuse. I mean, we just sometimes forget the meaning of them. So it's, you know, it may be true for some who have always celebrated Ramadan, but it's also true for Christians who have always celebrated Lent or always you know, maybe the act of taking Holy Communion has become rote, you know, and familiar. And it's always good to get a fresh perspective and hear it in a new way.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Hadi on the line in Plano. Hi, Hadi.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
All right, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I appreciate having these people on your radio show.
Thank you.
And thank you. I have a question to Pastor.
Yes.
Okay. How do you feel that you are practicing in a month of Ramadan, and when it is considered as a Sharia, not to diverse from the topic, but I would like to have your opinion. Though I have so many other questions, this stood out the topmost that I would like to ask you. Mm-hmm. If this is a part of Sharia, then does your vision change on fasting? Or does it bring a different experience for you? So if you can answer, I appreciate your answer.
If you're asking how has my understanding of fasting changed, as I had mentioned before, it is simply a more extreme. It's taking a practice that I had known and had been slightly familiar with, and made it more intense and has really forced me to get to the heart of fasting, what it really means. And I really have had to be more conscious, more aware of God's presence at every moment. And it just seems like it's been more intense for me.
We have an email here from Muneeb in Plano who says, I sometimes share with my non-Muslim friends that when I break the fast, I feel the taste of the food and drink so intensely and pleasantly that apart from all religious reasons, that's enough reason to fast. And Muneeb wants to know if you both feel the same way.
Definitely. Yes. I mean, I don't eat dates throughout the year, but when I have dates in the month of Ramadan at the time of breaking fast, then it's the most pleasurable thing on earth. So
just that sweetness.
So true.
The sweetness, yeah.
It's so true. It's especially the first couple of nights when I ate, I said to my wife, "Oh, this is the best dinner I've ever had. It just tastes incredible." So I've certainly noticed that as well. It has been a joy.
What it does is actually makes us grateful for what God's given us. Mm-hmm. We should never complain about food that God's given us, and we should always be thankful for it. And that's the lesson we learn from that.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next on the line, we have Susan in Plano. Hi, Susan. Susan, turn off your radio if you would. Thank you. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hey. Assalamu
alaikum, Imam Yassin.
Wa alaikum salam. Pastor Reverend Magruder, my question is to you. I was reading a couple of negative comments on your blog and just wanted to know, how do you answer to those people who I think one person said, we'll see if you'll come back to the church, that sort of stuff.
Yes, I think on one website that had picked up my blog, there were some negative comments. People I have no idea who they are. You know, I've view this as a very simple matter for me as a Christian. You know, one of the most important commands that Jesus lifts up is to love your neighbor as yourself. And then someone questioned him, "Who is my neighbor?" And Jesus was very, very clear that the neighbor is the other whom you encounter. It may be anywhere or everywhere. And so I very early on, you know, realized that Muslims are my neighbors in Plano. Literally, they're my neighbors. They live in my neighborhood. Yasin is my neighbor, and he is my friend. And I have a Christian obligation from my own tradition to love and treat them as I would want to be treated. And in order to do that, you have to, as I said before, get to know them. So this kind of has a dual purpose, to get to know the Muslims in my community, and then to begin to actually love them.
Of course, you've probably both experienced this, that in a religiously diverse society like the United States is, and like England is, there are asking and learning about other faiths can be a tricky thing. People have earnest questions, but they're not sure how to ask them. From both of your perspectives, I wonder, you know, the right and the wrong way for people to ask questions of either one of you about things they don't understand about what you believe.
See, in Islam, from the Quran, we learn that our dialogue should be with wisdom and kind words. And the Quran says not to repel bad with bad, but with good. Therefore, I mean, as an imam, I get asked tons of questions from people, and some of them may seem offensive, but they're with good intent. The person is willing to learn. He wants to understand you better. So to exercise patience, understanding is of utmost importance to that. It's very easy for a person to show anger and just walk away, and that doesn't achieve anything. And I think that we have to be ready to face the strong questions, the challenging questions, because that would build a better society or build a better city. So, I mean, I have, for my, personally, it's not, I mean, it's a Quranic injunction where God says, do not repel evil with evil. So a person may be asking you a question that may seem offensive, but you have to respond with kindness.
Does it take time to build up that wisdom? You look quite young to me, but that sounds like something that it's a very wise way to look at offensive questions.
First of all, thank you. And secondly, yes, I think as you get older, I think you develop that sort of wisdom and maturity. But I think if your intentions are good, then it doesn't matter. Regardless of your age and experience, you would definitely be more understanding. Because if we look at Muhammad, we look at Jesus, we look at the great prophets of God, they never repelled evil with evil. They were kind, generous people. They faced backlash, persecution, torture, all sorts of atrocious reactions from their people. But they reacted with respect, with love, with generosity. Muhammad was a peacemaker, and Jesus was a peacemaker, and that's the intention that we should have as leaders of our communities, to demonstrate that peacemaking ability, and to also teach our congregations and our communities to demonstrate that through their actions, through their words, through participating in common things that we hold common, like social issues that we hold common, service work. And so I think it's all dependent on the intent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I've seen in action taking tough questions. He at his mosque often holds sessions he calls Islam 101, and he specifically just throws the doors open to anybody in the community who wants to come and ask questions. And I've seen him field tough questions. People who, you know, I felt like had hidden agendas. You know, they were trying to bring them out, and he just handled them very gracefully and deftly, you know, wove his way through it and handled it very well. I'm trying to learn from that. I'm trying to learn that for that myself.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Razan on the line in Frisco. Hi, Razan.
Hi, good afternoon, Chris, Pastor Wes, and Imam Yasin. First of all, I'd like to thank you for taking my call. And I'm part of the Plano Muslim community, so I would just like to thank Pastor, for taking this journey with us. My question is for the pastor. I was wondering if you would repeat this challenge of fasting maybe in future Ramadans, and would you encourage this to members of your congregation? Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, I would consider doing this again, and I think there are some people in my congregation who would be willing to give this a try, and I would be happy to. I'd be happy to go through it with some other people and to have people in my own faith community walk through it, and we could reflect on it together and process it. But it is something I'd encourage if you are healthy enough to do it. And yes, I'd like to do it again.
So you come to Eid. It's a joyful time, and it's a time when you sort of reflect on your spiritual accomplishment and on what you've been able to do. How do you ensure that you carry the spirit of what you have learned and observed throughout the rest of the year?
That's probably the toughest question. I think that it depends on the way a person spent their Ramadan. If they spent their Ramadan as a technicality where they had to fast and they didn't really concentrate on their spirit, then it's difficult for them to carry on that message after Ramadan. But if they use Ramadan as a training ground, a warm-up for them to build a connection with God and get in touch with their spirituality, with the community, with the society at large, then I think it becomes easier for them to continue that message after Ramadan and live as a Muslim out of Ramadan too.
How about living as a Christian after Ramadan?
Well, I believe that, you know, I'm going to continue the relationship, obviously, with Yassine and my new friends and continue to build bridges. I feel like one of the important things that can come out of this is we can build a bridge between the Muslim and the Christian community. I think Yassine's already done a great job of making some strides there, but there's no doubt we could do better and do more. And I also will continue to meditate on fasting and try to make it a more regular part of my own spiritual disciplines. I take it seriously, and I take my spiritual discipline seriously, and I'm finding there to be a great benefit in this.
Do you both feel we've made progress in this country with regard to understanding people who have different beliefs than we might hold?
Well, I personally feel like we have. As I mentioned, there's a lot of curiosity. People are very curious, and they want to learn. They're willing to learn. And America's always been a country where you have truth seekers. Billy Graham says the truth of the world don't exist in America. They're around the world, everywhere. But America is full of truth seekers. So I do feel that there is a curiosity, and it's up to us to open our doors and open our arms and welcome people into our places of worship and build that understanding.
The Imam Yassin Sheikh is Imam of the Plano Masjid and the Islamic Association of Collin County. The Reverend Dr. Wes Magruder is Senior Associate Pastor of First United Methodist Church of Rowlett. You can read his blog about his experiences at the New Methifesto. Gentlemen, it's been really interesting. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bellotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is senior producer. You can learn more about the show and download the daily podcast every day online at kera.org/think. Email comments, questions, or suggestions for the show to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.